The Baseball Tonight podcast is presented by LinkedIn Jobs.
Way out of here. Oh,
this is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Friday, June 11, 2021. I'm Buster Olney, working from my home studio and pinch hitting today for Taylor Schwenk. Is Christina Buswell, who you all probably know from the Adam Schefter podcast, or worked with Katie Nolan. How you doing, Christina? And I, as I bring you in, you know, the first question I always ask somebody comes in the podcast the first time. When you were growing up, what was your favorite baseball team? Who was your favorite player?
Interesting. So growing up, I was a huge Red Sox fan. My grandfather would go to every Red Sox game. So I basically had no choice. I had to like the Red Sox. Growing up, I wouldn't say there was one player in particular, but over the years, as of late, I especially grew to love Mookie Betts. And I was crushed when the Red Sox got rid of him.
When you first started hearing the rumors of that possible trade, what were you thinking?
Oh, I was panicking. Like, please don't let this be true. How is that possible? Why would we do that? And it eventually happened.
Hey, what did you like about him as a player?
I just think that he's, you know, he's an electric personality. He's a really great guy. So on and off the field, I just think he has this infectious smile, this infectious laugh and personality. And I think that he's a dynamic player. I think he's fun to watch. I think that, you know, the way his teammates rally around him is great. So I just all around, I really enjoyed watching him play. I won't say that I'm a Dodgers fan by any means, but I will still watch Mookie and root for him.
Tell me what it was like the first time you walked into Fenway Park, like your memories of the first time. I'm guessing you've been there. If your grandfather was that big of a fan, you guys probably went together.
Oh yeah. It was, driving up there the entire time, my grandpa just kept saying, you know, this is going to be the greatest experience of your life, the greatest experience. And I said, oh, okay. Okay. And he's right. I think that growing up, I didn't appreciate it as much as I do now. I went back a few years ago and did a private tour and actually got to go inside the Green Monster and, you know, see everything from a different perspective. And I would be lying if I said I didn't cry. I think that it's just if you're a baseball fan and if you're a fan of the history and you're, you know, you're invested the way my grandfather is. Being able to, you know, stand in the outfield and see everything from the player's perspective is just the coolest thing.
Did you sign inside the Green Monster? Did they give you guys the opportunity to do that?
I did. And I actually have a video of me signing it and I texted it to my grandfather, although my grandfather does not text. So he received it, didn't know how to open the video. I had to call him and explain it. And he said, is that you signing the Green Monster? And I said, it sure is. So a really cool experience.
What was his reaction to that? I bet you that was emotional for him to see that and to know he shared it with you.
Absolutely. He got teary-eyed and he said, that's the coolest thing. Next time, bring me with you. I said, I definitely will. If I ever get that opportunity again, I will.
That's really cool. That's awesome. All right, let's get to the good stuff from last night. Twins played the Yankees. Giancarlo Stanton gave the Yankees a win in the top of the first inning.
Stanton. Hits that in the air to center and deep. Celestino doesn't have a play. He's done it again. Perfectly balanced and gone.
That call from the Yes Network. Now, the Yankees had a 5-3 lead going into the bottom of the ninth inning, and Aaron Boone called on Aroldis Chapman, who has basically been the best closer in baseball this year. But right away, there were problems.
High fly, left center field. Going back is Andujar. We are tied.
So Donaldson's home run tied the game. 5-5. Twins got another runner on base. And here was Nelson Cruz.
5-5. Astudillo at first. And the pitch, a swing and a fly ball. Left center field and deep. Back it goes. Deep it goes. Twins win. Twins win. The Minnesota Twins win it.
That sound from the Treasure Island Baseball Network. And after the game, Nelson Cruz talked about his home run.
All right, Nelson, after a tough couple of games, how good does it feel to give your team a big win like this one?
Definitely feels nice, you know. Definitely we are struggling to score runs, and everything has got to go against us. Thanks God today we were able to come up on top in front of the fans.
Some other news and notes from around baseball. The Colorado Rockies activated shortstop Trevor Story from the 10-day injured list. And Story went 1-for-3 with a walk against the Marlins yesterday. Story had been on the injured list since May 29th with right elbow inflammation. Another big injury for the Chicago White Sox. Nick Madrigal, their second baseman, went on the injured list with a hamstring tear, and it was on the 60-day injured list. The White Sox have been hammered by injuries. We're going to be talking about that as we move forward. These are really bad days for the Arizona Diamondbacks, who are moving toward that time when they're going to be sellers before the trade deadline. Yesterday, they fired hitting coach Darnell Coles and assistant hitting coach Eric Hinsky in an effort to shake this offense up. The White Sox, the Blue Jays yesterday, and Yasmani Grandal gave the White Sox the lead in the first inning.
Yasmani Grandal batting right-handed. He drives one to right. Well hit. It will go! Two-run homer! Just like that, it's 3-0.
That sound from ESPN 1000. The Brewers beat the Reds 7-2 with help from Jace Peterson.
Second and third, two outs. Pitch to Peterson, popped up, shallow left. That one has a chance. It's down. A base hit. Yelich is in. Adames is in. Brewers take the lead, 4-2.
And a wild game in Philadelphia yesterday. Braves and Phillies. Zach Wheeler was outstanding. Here was Zach Wheeler in the top of the eighth inning.
One ball, two strikes. The stretch by Wheeler. Here's the pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out. A curveball from Wheeler. And it's his 12th strikeout on the afternoon.
That sound from Sports Radio 94 WIP. But Freddie Freeman hit a game-tying home run in the top of the ninth inning after the Phillies had taken the lead, and the two sides went to extras. The Braves scored twice in the top of the 10th, taking a 3-1 lead. And then this happened in the bottom of the 10th.
Breaking ball, hit in the air, deep. Left center field on the run. Almonte to the track, near the wall, reaches out. It's off the top of the fence. In play. Boehm scores. The ball rolls away. Here comes Odubel. The throw to the plate is late, and the Phillies walk him off again.
That was Scott Fransky, Sports Radio 94 WI.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirectTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
All aboard. It's the Rabby Train with Carl Ravage on Baseball Tonight.
Carl Ravage, of course, the host of Baseball Tonight, play-by-play man for ESPN. The Rabby Train just keeps on rolling, Carl.
Also, the Rabbit Train is enjoying life right now. Rabbit Train is now kind of going to transition a little bit from Major League to college. We have Super Regionals this weekend, and then, of course, off to Omaha for the College World Series, where, of course, the Commodores have to get through their Super Regional, but very likely with Kumar Rocker and Jack Leiter end up in Omaha. We'll see. I have Texas Tech to start things off against Stanford. And we're looking forward to that because this is, in a lot of ways, the future of Major League Baseball. And these guys will someday participate in home run derbies, and they're being judged on spin rates and all that stuff right now.
Well, you know, it's fun for me when Vanderbilt plays because that's the one place, they and the Minnesota Vikings, where I can sort of set aside the, you know, the neutral reporter who
objectivity.
Doesn't care who wins. So I will be texting you when you're doing a Vanderbilt game and going, what was up with that call? I apologize in advance. All right.
I'm waiting for that.
Very nice. I had Sarah Langs in the podcast yesterday. We talked about our grade eight for the Home Run Derby. You are the host of the Derby coverage. So I want you to take a shot at this Bleacher tweet to start with. This from Jacob Sarabia, who basically chastised me yesterday after he gave the grade eight that I have for the Derby because I didn't have Yordan Alvarez in my group. So, Carl, I want you to chime in. Here's the eight that I came up with. Number one, Pete Alonso, defending champion. Guy loves the event, has made it clear that he'll do the event as long as anybody invites him. You absolutely would have to have him there. Shohei Ohtani, although I fully acknowledge Sarah agreed with me that we don't think that, you know, Ohtani necessarily would do that. You know, maybe the Angels would say, look, you might back off, but we would love for him to be there. Fernando Tatis Jr. It would be so much fun to have him in the event. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., one of the main front runners at this point for the American League MVP award. Ronald Acuna Jr., Juan Soto of the Washington Nationals. Because I didn't put Jesse Winker in a Twitter poll earlier this week, I got Reds fans all over me. So I'm putting Jesse Winker in my eight just so I can get past Cincinnati at some point. And my number eight was Ryan McMahon, the events in Colorado. And I'd love to see a Rocky in the event. If you want, you know, pick that apart.
Yeah, I think I'd love all the juniors, so I would add Fernando Tatis Jr. And I would like to see, for the sake of Colorado, as you said, Nolan Arenado in it. I think that would be a wonderful twist, given obviously yeah. He's no longer there, but I'd love to see him join. So I would add those two to go with Alonso, who's got to defend. Vlad has to be in it. I'd like to get those two in. And look, I do agree with Ohtani in both cases. He needs to be in it, and B, he won't be in it because he pitches. Now, if he just DH'd and played the field and wasn't a pitcher, but the beauty and the reason we want Ohtani in it is because he is a pitcher. So, he would probably be at the top of my list of wants. But I understand, but he's who the event needs, you know. Trout's not doing it because he's hurt. You'd always love to have a Stanton or a Judge, just given Colorado and how far the ball will travel. But I love your list. I want the juniors in it. I want Fernando. I want Vlad. I want Ronald. I agree with you on Soto because I think Soto would put a show on. You know, I think he would be a guy that A, embraces it, but there's so much more than just watching him hit homers. He would be a sideshow with his dancing, with his antics, which is intensity. So I'd add Fernando Tatis Jr. and I'd love to see Nolan Arenado do it.
I love your idea of Arenado. In fact, I think if you had that group of seven, if you had Alonso, Ohtani, Tatis Jr., Vlad Jr., Acuna Jr., Soto, and Nolan Arenado, that would be as exciting a field as we've ever seen for me. You know, and no, I think you and I have been doing this, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever, doing the Home Run Derby. That would be awesome.
Yeah. We'll wish on it.
Well, what do you think about Yordan Alvarez?
To me, Yordan Alvarez, see, I had this conversation with somebody, I think, about the NBA slam dunk competition and the Home Run Derby. And to me, you know, when we were growing up, in order for the slam dunk competition to be great, Dr. J needed to be in it. Dominique Wilkins needed to be in it. Spud Webb needed to be in it. And then it kind of changed and you recognize, well, because anybody can dunk. And in the Home Run Derby, for the most part, anybody can hit home runs. Yordan Alvarez is an unbelievable hitter. But Yordan Alvarez, to me, falls into a category, of Joey Gallo, of Rafael Devers. Like, there's just a lot of guys who can do what Alvarez does. Now, if I'm an Astro fan, sure, it's like the All-Star game. I want to see my guy in it. I understand. Look, you could – Astro guy last year could have said, I want George Springer in it. That would have made sense. To me, you know, the guys that we named – separate themselves because of their personality, because of their flair, because of their size, because of how far they hit the ball. Alvarez checks the boxes, but he checks the same boxes to me a lot of other guys do. The unique right. part of the Ohtanis and the juniors separate him. But yeah, if Yordan Alvarez is in it, we don't lose. I can tell you that. We win. If he's willing to do it, we're great with him because he'll hit some blasts in Colorado.
And he's part of a really impressive Houston offense. They blew their lead against the Red Sox last night, but they effectively demonstrated, I think, in that series that right now they're the better team than the Red Sox. And along the way, Alex Cora said that they've got the best offense in baseball. They're number one in runs. They're 336. They have the lowest strikeout rate at 21.8%. They're number one in weighted runs created plus. And Carl, it's not close. They're at a 121 with a, you know, the midline being 100. The White Sox are second at 112. So a huge gap between the Astros and the White Sox, first and second. You agree with Alex that right now the Astros have the best offense in baseball?
I think the Astros, Buster, and I said this 2 weeks ago on Baseball Tonight, Sunday Night Countdown, they will be ranked number one in the power rankings within the next 2 weeks.
Really?
I think they're as good a team as they're. Yeah, I do. I think they're as good a team. And this was, we did the Astros when Valdez came back, Urquidy was pitching great. You realize, like, my God, these guys haven't been there. Brantley was out. Alvarez was hurt. I think they're as competitive a team in the American League as there is, and I do think at one point they'll be atop the power rankings. The other category the Astros lead baseball in is foul balls. You don't strike them out. They are exactly what the Red Sox, when they were winning World Series, were. They grind every at bat. They're athletic enough. They can steal bases at the bottom. They have speed. They can pitch, and if they go out and get another bullpen piece, yeah, I think they could absolutely represent the American League in the World Series. I'm all in. I've been all in on the Astros since it occurred to me, when you really do a little deeper look into them, how banged up they've been. And then you couple that with they're getting healthy. They have experience. And in the end, if they get there, the whole Dusty Baker story becomes a great story. So I'm all in on the Astros. And Sarah's been part of some of our games, and she's well aware of my opinion about them and their ability to just grind at bats, which means getting into bullpens and getting leads. And most of the time, if it's a 3-1, 5-1 game, you're not facing the best guys in the other team's bullpen. You're just going to add on. I like them a lot.
So the big game today, as you know, the Mets against the Padres, Jacob DeGrom pitching, of course, Fernando Tatis Jr. At some point, we'll see that showdown. But here's the thing, Carl, I was kind of bummed overnight. Sometimes I fall asleep and I've got the radio on. And so living here in New York, I listened to the end of the Yankees and Twins game and I fell asleep and I woke up to a talk show where the caller called in and said, "Hey, you know what? I was watching Chapman last night. He gave up 2 home runs. This guy's been untouchable the whole year. But you know why he gave up the home runs? Because he wasn't using foreign substances. That's why I think, he gave up." And it made me cringe, but I kind of think that's where we are. And I feel for someone like Jacob DeGrom, who's been so unbelievable. But if he goes out and, doesn't have the DeGrom-type outing, and he comes into the start with a 0.62 ERA, guess what? Then it becomes like a thing. Like, oh, did he have an advantage because of something he had on his arm that maybe he doesn't have anymore? And that kind of stinks, Carl.
It stinks really badly. And I'm, God, if that's the case, then Aroldis Chapman, isn't who Aroldis Chapman is alleged to be and who we're paying these guys to be. I hope that's not the case, Buster. But again, we talked about this too. I hope that Major League Baseball, the players, are all working towards getting a substance, which everybody would agree gives the hitter peace of mind that the pitcher will be able to control where the baseball goes. Not necessarily control how much spin they get on it or how hard they can throw it, but where the baseball is going. And in a lot of ways, other sports are considering similar things. PGA Tour, do we reduce the ball flight so that you don't have somebody hitting a golf ball 385 yards when most others can hit it 335 yards? In baseball, can we come up with a substance which will allow the pitcher to grip the baseball and be very confident when he does it right, it will go where it's supposed to, as opposed to into an opposing hitter's head? So, God, if that's going to be the sword we fall back on, then I think we have bigger problems. And I hope we're not in a position where somebody's going to get hit by a baseball and it's going to be, well, that's because I didn't have substance on the baseball. I hope that that's not the case. And I worry about that.
So you and I talked at length about foreign substances and the forthcoming effort to push against it. From what I understand, the memo could go out to teams as soon as Monday, and then perhaps a week from today, maybe in 10 days, that's when we're going to see Major League Baseball instruct umpires to go out and enforce this rule. How aggressive do you think they're going to be based on what you've heard?
I think they're going to be aggressive. And look, Buster, if you're a pitcher in Major League Baseball or you're an organization, have you been warned long enough? Have you seen this tidal wave coming for what now, a month? Like, we don't have excuses. It's not as if somebody woke up and said, we're changing the rules in the next 5 hours. So if you have it on your buckle of your belt, or you have it on your shoe, or your catcher has it on a shin guard, and you're already dressed for the game, we're not in that situation. So everybody's been forewarned. I think they're going to be aggressive. I do think there's a relationship between umpire and player, umpire and catcher, umpire and pitcher. They're on the field. They're the guys involved in the war, so to speak. They're the warriors. When some general far off is suggesting we've got to change this, just because it's said that way doesn't mean there's an instant response. And I think given the dynamic between umpire and player, you know, then the guys that are in the uniform and on the field, there's got to be something between them, said or unsaid, which doesn't feel like every umpire is literally, you know, Inspector Clouseau or microscope guy. And you're made to feel, let's just say you're made to feel like I'm going out there and I already know I'm guilty in the minds of that guy, even though I don't have anything on me. I don't think we're going to get there, but I do think when it's apparent, it's going to be fairly aggressive.
Yeah.
Kind of like the John Farrell deal, John Farrell with Pineda. What the hell you want me to do? It's so obvious here. Come on.
Exactly. You know, when we talked about this on Baseball Tonight last Sunday, you know, Jeff Passan had just talked to a pitcher who suggested to him that, you know what I might do? And I'm paraphrasing here. I might wipe a bunch of stuff on my inner thighs, or essentially around his privates, and basically challenge the umpires to check it. Are you really going to check me for that foreign substance? What I would say to that pitcher, and I don't know who Jeff talked to, was, dude, yes, they will follow you down into the tunnel if that's what you require, if that's what you force them to do. That's how serious they are about this. You feel the same way?
100%. And by the way, I forget the tunnel. If you're willing to put that, whatever it is, in your pants, and you're challenging me to expose you, pull them down. I don't. It's not me who's exposing themselves. Yes, I'll check you right here. If you're gonna put me in a position to wonder, or you're constantly going into your pants, dang straight, we can do it here. We can do it wherever you want. But it's happening. So that's on you. Yeah, I do think they would. That's disrespectful. I don't play that. I don't understand that. And that pitcher seems to be wanting to draw attention to themselves, cause a fight. I don't know how you defend somebody who says, well, if I put it there, are you going to look or not? Like, yes. I don't understand. If I robbed a bank and I put the money in a fireplace or flushed it into a toilet, are you going to go in there and look? Well, of course I am. You stole the money. I'm going to find it. I don't care where you put it. I'm going to find it.
And I think that player might be under the misconception that if you were to do something like that, you'd have an army of people behind him going, yeah, you're right. I think, as we heard from, you know, someone like Alex Cobb the other day, yeah, I get it why they're doing it. They want to get back to having a level playing field. I've got a minute left. I want to ask you about the White Sox. They lose another starter among the position players, Nick Madrigal, going down onto the 60-day injured list. They've already, of course, Eloy Jimenez earlier this year, Luis Robert. They're major injuries, but I also feel like if a team is going to withstand a group of injuries, it would be the White Sox inhabiting the American League Central, especially given the fact that I think the White Sox, like the Mets, like the Padres, have demonstrated they're all in, and I think they'll add before the trade deadline.
All in and can pitch. You know, the names you just mentioned aren't pitchers. And when your pitchers go down, to me, you're obviously in bigger trouble than when your position players go down, given the depth and quality of the position player they have. Look, they built a juggernaut. They built a team that was really deep and really good on the offensive end. We knew that going in. They lose some really big pieces, but they're in that division and they can still pitch. So I'm not, I believe you're right. They're going to add. Reinsdorf went out on a limb in a lot of ways and hired Tony. He's not going to put Tony in a position where he's handcuffed him or handicapped him. And yes, I agree with you 100%. And just quickly back to the DeGrom thing against the Padres. If Jacob DeGrom is on, the Padres don't hit him. Nobody hits Jacob DeGrom when he's on. Now, if he's off, they'll hit him. But if he's on, he puts up a zero, and the Mets, if they don't score, they're tied 0-0. If they score, they win.
Yeah, an evaluator said to me the other day that right now the Jacob DeGrom we're seeing on the mound is the best pitcher we've ever seen in baseball history, and I completely agree with that. It used to be Pedro Martinez, 99-2000 for me, and now it's Jacob DeGrom in 2021. All right, sir, I'll be talking with you on Baseball Tonight on Sunday night. Thank you.
Okay, bud. Thanks.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code baseball. That's code baseball. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
Todd Radom, the chief executive of our weekly quiz. He's a graphic artist whose work can be seen on ball fields all across America, all around the world. Or you can go to his website, toddradom.com. Todd, welcome. I know you're up in Worcester.
Buster, I am in beautiful Worcester, Massachusetts. It's a little overcast here, but very excited. And just briefly, I am here because the Worcester Art Museum has an exhibition called The Iconic Jersey, Baseball and Fashion. It runs June 12th through September 12th. So I'm up here for the grand opening of that. And it's right up my alley, to say the least. It's got historic and contemporary examples of baseball uniforms, some of the history of the uniform. It involves fashion. And some of my work is in it. So I've made it to an actual art museum, Buster. It's amazing.
Nice. Now, are you going to do some sort of presentation as part of this? Or are you going to be at the museum and if folks want to drop by?
Well, I'm going to be doing a master's lecture via Zoom next Thursday night. I'll be tweeting out the details on that, nice and easy, but it's going to be a discussion, basically, again, about the history of the uniform, where things started. I'm going to focus on a couple of clubs that I deem the untouchables. I'm going to look at some designs for clubs that have gone back and forth over the years. So I think it's nice and accessible and hopefully interesting. And tickets are available online. And like I said, I'll tweet a link out later on today.
Yeah, I bet you get a great response to that. Naturally, your forgotten franchise for this week comes from Worcester.
Yes, and it was, you know, I planned things out very well is all I'm going to say. So, Buster, as you said, today I am in Worcester, Massachusetts, a city with a brand new minor league team and a city that for three seasons played host to a National League club, one with the outstanding name of, are you ready? The Worcester Worcesters. Some people refer to the club as the Brown Stockings or the Ruby Legs, but there are no contemporary sources that support the use of either of those names. From 1880 to 1882, this small city, which then consisted of 58,000 inhabitants, this was a member of the National League, having replaced the defunct Syracuse Stars team that we are going to be discussing in a few weeks. The club played its home games about 1 mile from where I am sitting right now at the Worcester Driving Park grounds, part of which is now the site of Becker College. Worcester's big league history began on May 1st, 1880, when the club opened at home with a resounding 13-1 victory over Troy, a game that was played on what was described as a cold, windy day in front of only 931 fans. 6 weeks later, on June 12th, Worcester pitcher Lee Richmond threw the first perfect game in Major League history against the Cleveland Blues. The Worcester club won 43 games that season, Buster, against 45 losses and two ties, and this proved to be their high watermark. The team was putrid in 1881 and even worse in 1882, their final campaign when they won only 18 of 84 games. As the 1882 season was winding to a close, fans were staying away in droves. Small market Worcester and their brethren in Troy, New York, were bounced out of the National League, and the Worcester's final two home games were witnessed by paid crowds of 6 and 18 fans, respectively. Wow. Yes, you heard me correctly. Troy's share of the gate, Buster, their receipts for their penultimate game, a grand total of 45 cents. Did not pay for the road trip, to say the least. Worcester and Troy were granted honorary National League memberships and were replaced the following seasons by Philadelphia and New York, today's Phillies and Giants. But Worcester's new team, the minor league Red Sox, have installed a tribute to their ancestors on the cast iron end caps of each row of seats in their new ballpark here, a design inspired by a symbol used by that 1880s club, the letter W on top of a heart, emblematic of the city's claim as the heart of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. So, Buster, let us all now remember the Worcester Worcesters, the outstandingly named this week's forgotten franchise.
Yeah, that might be the worst, Nick. We talked a couple weeks ago about how we might have seen the worst team name ever. That might be the worst team name. I mean, come on, a little imagination. And among the notes you sent me, which is really cool, is that the Worcesters had a special place in the history of doubleheaders.
Yes, a couple of very noteworthy things about the Worcesters. I'm gonna pull my notes back up, which I actually just closed out over here, Buster. So why don't you take that away and I'll expand upon it.
Yeah, the club decided to host the first ever 2-for-the-price-of-1 doubleheader on September 25th, 1882, as the way to entice fans to come to the ballpark. So the first 2-for-the-price-of-1 doubleheader, a product of the Worcesters, which is really cool.
Yeah, and they were talk about like, you know, okay, the name wasn't necessarily a marketing act of genius, but the doubleheader part, as they were scrapping away trying to draw fans more than 18 or 6, they struck upon that. And just one final quick note, the Worcesters were instrumental in having the Cincinnati Reds expelled from the league due to violations of National League rules against the selling of beer at the ballpark and for playing games on Sundays.
Horrifying.
You know, talk about bad blood.
Playing games on Sundays.
I mean, you know, that's even worse than using sticky substances. Imagine a pitcher getting called out for, you know, you're about to bounce us out of the league because we're selling beer and playing games on Sundays.
Oh, my goodness. All right, let's get to this week's quiz. Christina stepping in for Taylor. Todd, meet Christina.
Hello, Christina. Welcome aboard and good luck to you this week.
Hello, Todd. Thank you very much.
All right, so here we go. This is the only franchise to have won a World Series before it ever won a game on opening day. Is it A, the Diamondbacks, B, the Royals, C, the Red Sox, or D, the New York Mets? This franchise won a World Series before it ever won a game on opening day. Diamondbacks, Royals, Red Sox, or Mets?
Oh, my God. That is a crazy question. Like that one right there, Todd, that is an interesting question. I'm running through my head on the history. And Christina, I'll go first as you're pinch hitting. Oh, my goodness. That is a fascinating question. Now I'm going through my history of what I know about opening day streaks. If I remember correctly, I think the Mets won their first game. So that wouldn't be them. I'm going to go with the Diamondbacks. Christina, what you got?
I was actually going to say Diamondbacks too, so I guess we'll see.
So you're both saying Diamondbacks, huh?
Yep.
All right, well, you're both wrong because it was the New York Mets.
Oh, shoot!
The New York Mets' first opening day win was in 1970. They won the World Series in 1969. So there you have it.
See, that's an old person's memory right there. Like, I had something distinct in my memory bank about the Mets on opening day, But I, for some reason, I had in my head that that 62 team, which was, you know, the considered to be the worst team in baseball history, actually won its first game. But obviously, I was very wrong there, Todd.
You were. And I think probably what you're thinking about, Buster, is that the Mets have performed remarkably well on opening day over the course of their history. But that's really post 1970. And we use the word putrid to describe the Worcester Worcesters. Well, the 62 Mets are another kind of putrid. But another story for another day. But Christina, you held serve. So I consider that a victory.
Very nice. All right, Todd. Good to talk with you. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
That's it for today. My thanks, Christina. I hope you had fun. Christina, you, according to Todd, you beat me in this week's quiz.
And honestly, I am very happy about that. I had no idea what to expect, but I guess I'll walk away with a W this week.
And a lot better than Taylor. Taylor would have gotten it wrong, and it would have, you know, I guess, increased his losing streak to about 2.5 months. My thanks to Todd Reid and to Carl Ravitch. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something that we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.